Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. I hope you're well. Thank you so much for finding us. It is not all that hard, is it? We're on just about every platform under the sun at the moment. It is good to have your company. Today, it's probably one of the biggest shows with the most fabulous guests we've had for many, many weeks. So don't move. Cancel what you have planned over the next 2 hours and stay right here. Cardiologist and world-renowned expert in the prevention, diagnosis, and management of heart disease, Dr. Haseem Malhotra is my special guest on the program today. He is no fan of the COVID mRNA vaccines, as you probably know, and has traveled the world to deliver warnings related to those vaccines. He will join us shortly. And if you'd like to ask him a question, there's an opportunity and a half. You can go right ahead. It can be vaccine-related, COVID-related, heart-related. Just jump on those talkback lines, first in, best dressed, from the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. From Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. He will join us in around about 10 minutes from now. We'll also be discussing today the increasing trend of sports bodies taking political sides. And we'll do that with the controversial One Nation Party leader in New South Wales, Mark Latham. We saw a classic example of this at one of Australia's most preeminent and most watched sporting events last night in Adelaide. You may have a view on what you saw before the game began. We'll also discuss with Mark a decision we're expecting to be handed down within the hour involving SAS soldier, Victoria Cross recipient, Ben Robert Smith. After 110 hearing days and $25 million in legal costs, a judge will deliver his verdict on whether Nine Media were right to accuse the highly decorated soldier of murder. A charge he denies. It could change the culture inside Australia's Defence Force forever. Now, the judge will walk into the court in around about 7 minutes from now, and I'll keep across it for you. I'll also catch up with psychiatrist and journalist Tanvir Ahmed about the impact today's decision will have on serving soldiers and the engagement Australia has militarily with the likes of the United States, the UK and France. Will they turn their back on Australia, do you think, if one, Ben Robert Smith, loses this case and further charges are laid against some of his colleagues in the SAS who allegedly committed crimes in Afghanistan? It is a huge issue, that one. And we'll also talk to Tanvir about the decrepit Victorian Liberal Party, which is now facing a by-election because one of its MPs decided he'd had enough, as many members of the same party in Victoria are expressing at the moment as well. You'll be hearing from Women's Issues website creator Sally Grover later on the show. Sally has been locked in a court battle against a transgender person over access to her site, The Giggle. Now, this is legal action taken by a biological man, a fellow by the name of Tickle, so it's Giggle versus Tickle, who's a transgender woman and is seeking damages because he or she was banned from contributing to the women's only website, The Giggle. Sex is binary, as we know, but will the court recognise this? We will have a verdict on that shortly, and Sal Grover will have her say. And back on this Indigenous voice to the Australian Parliament too, champion race car driver Larry Perkins is furious with Motorsport Australia for publicly backing the yes vote at the upcoming referendum. Again, sport and politics mixing. Like many sporting stars in other sports, they are uncomfortable with sports dabbling in politics and presuming that they speak for all their members and affiliated sports identities. They don't. As we've heard time and time again, Larry Perkins is the latest, and Larry will join us this hour on the program. So that's some of what's on. A very busy rundown today, but I've always got time for you and your views. So by all means, come and join the conversation on the numbers that I've just mentioned to you. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live from Sydney, Australia, on the Global News Talk Network, tntradio.live.
Your news when you need it.
They cover the important story.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dr. Asim Malhotra coming up on the program shortly. But I want to open the show today wondering quite seriously and putting it out for comment whether the man some US political experts are tipping will be the most powerful person in the world by the end of next year has just thrown his chance of governing away. Specifically, has Florida governor, the latest presidential candidate to put his hand up, Ron DeSantis, just killed any chance he had of becoming the president of the United States by wrongly defining his mission statement this week? Did you hear what DeSantis said on Tuesday? Did you hear his interview on Fox News and his damning of wokeness? Now, that's not his mistake. In fact, that's his key policy and one which will resonate with many Republicans and, of course, those swinging in the middle as well. That's a good policy. That's a great mission statement. It's what he said alongside that promise that I think may be a terrible own goal. Have a listen closely to this.
Everyone knows if I'm the nominee, I will beat Biden and I will serve two terms and I will be able to destroy leftism in this country and leave woke ideology on the dustbin of history.
He's out to destroy leftism. Leftism. What is leftism? Someone who considers themselves left-leaning politically. Does he really think that he doesn't need normally left-leaning or often left-leaning voters to win the presidency? Does he really think he can glide into office on the back of Republican votes only? Staunch Republicans only? Does he think that? He hasn't done his homework. History tells us that it's the swinging middle. Americans who may consider themselves left most of the time or just some of the time who decide elections. The rusted on Republicans are and will just be that, rusted on, and 9 out of 10 times they'll be on your side if you're a Republican candidate like Ron DeSantis. He must be seriously, I don't know, mistaken by some advice that he's received. The middle will only consider DeSantis if he welcomes them. Now, the middle may sometimes show signs of voting for left-wing leaders, but they decide elections. Now, let me show you the reaction from a group of women from the television panel show The View. Now, it's hardly a serious group of political analysts, but that is my very point. This group speaks to middle American women mainly, and they are not, as a group, rusted on to the flanks of either party or philosophy. But they are open-minded about who to vote for and could be regarded as influential middle dwellers. Firstly, the governor's comments about bidding wokeism, it was met with anger from the normally left-leading panelist Joy Behar.
He will destroy leftism. Really, that's a lot of
people in this
country.
Well, it's also a terrible general election. Well, yes,
and he will get rid of wokeism. You know what? I am woke, and I'm proud of it, okay?
Yeah.
Now, DeSantis will never get Joy's vote, nor anyone who's out to rewrite history and put everything through the filter of political correctness. They won't be voting for DeSantis. But his leftism comments, that's different, and they were enough to earn the wrath of Hollywood star Whoopi Goldberg.
Hey, Ron, You know, being asleep as you are and have been for quite some time. See, many of us have been awake this whole time. Yeah. We don't have any choice. We don't have choice as women to rest up and be asleep and see things disappear. We don't have time for that. So you want to fight all of us? Because you're going to be fighting your own women as well.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to take this ridiculousness that you are thrusting off you. It's not like they're voting for this. You are making these decisions for your state. We're watching you, Ron.
Now, Whoopi's reaction might easily be dismissed. Well, I disagree, it should not be ignored. She made mention of this ridiculousness. Now, she didn't say wokeism. I presume what she was referring to is leftism, which on many issues Whoopi can be, not all. And she made mention of the women that DeSantis would be fighting. You cannot hope to be president by telling those who may lean left at certain elections, but can be enticed to vote for a right-wing candidate like DeSantis, that they are leftists who need to be destroyed. Who thought that was a great idea? Maybe say you'll wipe out the extreme left, but leftism as a general philosophy will make many millions of Americans think that DeSantis is out to get them, not willing to lead for them. Now, the following day, during his very first formal stump speech of his 2024 presidential campaign in Iowa, he dropped the leftism policy altogether, not a mention of it. Maybe someone has tapped him on the shoulder, I don't know. And he sounded a lot more like a presidential candidate who knew what was upsetting Americans.
We can see it and we can feel it. Our southern border has collapsed. The Mexican drug cartels have more control over what goes on at the border than our own United States government. Look at the economy. The Biden administration is doing all it can to make it harder for the average family to make ends meet and to attain and maintain a middle-class lifestyle.
Spot on. I noticed, though, we mentioned middle-class lifestyle. It's the middle of America that could go either way, either party. So at times they could be left, at times they can be right. That's the definition of a swinger, a political swinger. He needs a huge chunk of those votes, especially women, to get over the line. Has he just lost them? I think there's a good argument if he continues this destruction of leftism line, he's a goner. Now, afterwards, away from the cameras at a press briefing, DeSantis took aim at his Republican foe, former President Donald Trump. He said Trump had moved left on federal spending, on abortion and crime, and therefore cannot win an election. He said there are a lot of voters that just aren't going to vote for him ever. We just have to accept that. That was off camera. DeSantis has now begun a 12-city tour across three early primary states, and someone needs to change his point of attack. Unless they've changed it already. It is right to go on the offensive against the woke. It is right to criticize Trump's flip-flopping on policy. But if he keeps saying he's out to destroy leftism without specifying the extreme left, middle America will find it very difficult to warm to the Florida governor. He needs center-left voters to tip him into power. And if he doesn't change his message, he may leave the vying for victory to Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And surely America deserves more than a two-horse race. This is TNT Radio.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
What is going on with the governments of our world ceding their authority to an unelected body, the WHO?
Well, I had a full briefing on the WHO treaty and the amendments to the international health regulations. They've got to be both looked at the same time. They both come from the WHO. Basically, for those who don't know, the WHO is an arm of the United Nations. It's based in Geneva. It's been in existence since about 1947. Its remit is to help world health, and it's got a charter, and that's all pretty benign. Until now, its recommendations have been advisory, but it's looking to get more powers. All their recommendations would be mandatory. governments would have to abide by them. It gives the Director General, Mr. Dr. Tedros, who's a particularly dubious background, the ability to call a public health emergency of international concern, which they would take sweeping powers over all aspects of our lives. It's really pretty frightening.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, the UK government has refused to say whether the COVID inquiry has asked Prime Minister Rishi Sunak for his WhatsApp messages. Now, the inquiry led by Baroness Hallett has already demanded Boris Johnson and a senior aide hand over their messages and notebooks. But the Cabinet Office is contesting the demand, saying the inquiry does not have a right to receive unambiguously irrelevant material from any minister or official. Labor's Deputy Leader Angela Rayner tweeted, "What have they got to hide? These legal battles and delaying tactics serve to undermine the COVID inquiry. The missing evidence must be found and handed over if the whiff of a cover-up is to be avoided, so bereaved families get the answers they deserve." Fair enough. But if Labor was in power, would they have handled COVID any better? You've got to probably conclude no. From the Labor Party's track record in opposition in the last few years, I think the answer is definitely no. Labor leader Keir Starmer made it clear early on that if he had his way, the UK would be following his pals, Justin Trudeau in Canada and Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, with unnecessary and never-ending regulations like vaccine and mask mandates, not to mention lockdowns. But it's fair to say the UK Conservative government handled COVID badly, as did many other governments right around the world. And the risks of the experimental mRNA vaccines were swept under the rug. We're now seeing alarming excess death statistics in the United Kingdom, in Australia, and much of the world where the COVID jabs were rushed out. And yet most politicians in the major parties don't want to put two and two together, even now when the evidence is overwhelming and they're running a mile from any kind of royal commission. My next guest has been across all of this. He's qualified to comment. He's on tour in Australia right now with the Australian Medical Professional Society, sponsored by TNT Radio. Dr. Asim Malhotra is an NHS-trained consultant cardiologist and visiting professor of evidence-based medicine, Bahiana School of Medicine and Public Health, Salvador, Brazil. He is a world-renowned expert in the prevention, diagnosis, and management of heart disease. He spent the past year fighting for the withdrawal of COVID mRNA vaccines and has traveled the world to deliver his warning about the link of these new experimental vaccines with cardiac issues. Dr. Asim Malhotra, welcome to Australia and TNT Radio.
Thank you, Chris. Delighted to speak to you today, mate.
Yeah, thank you. Have you received a warm welcome from your tour in Australia thus far?
Mate, it's been extraordinary, actually. Yeah, very much so. I've been to, this is the fourth time that I've been to Australia, my third speaking tour. But certainly this has been the warmest, basically standing ovations at every venue. So it's very nice. Yeah, it's very nice to have that kind of reception.
Tell me a little bit about this inquiry in the UK. I mentioned it at the start of this introduction, and there's a Barney going on at the moment about Rishi Sunak's WhatsApp messages. And of course, they've obtained similar messages that were on Boris Johnson's devices. How is this inquiry going, and what trajectory is it taking, do you think?
Well, I think it's difficult to know for sure at the moment, Chris, what trajectory it's taking or how it's going. We know it's happening. I think the one thing that certainly from my perspective definitely needs more attention and isn't the moment, although I think that may change, being covered in this inquiry is the issue about the vaccines and the mandates and the rollout. But I think it's important because certainly we learnt only a few months ago through a front page news story in the Sunday Telegraph that leaked WhatsApp messages from Matt Hancock, the Secretary for Health, revealed that early on in the pandemic, the plan was, in quotes, to frighten the pants off the public.
Yeah.
And that isn't good because, you know, fine, you know, we were dealing with a particularly devastating virus at the very beginning during the early Wuhan strain in elderly and vulnerable people, but it was never going to have that kind of effect in younger, healthier people. And to exaggerate the fears has ultimately had a very negative impact. And the reason they exaggerated the fear was one, you know, from their perspective, government perspective, as I mentioned in my lectures, it forces greater compliance of the population, but also it stops people engaging in critical thinking. And that's been very detrimental when you think about what's happened you know, over the last few years for public health, for democracy. As a doctor, I can tell you, you know, fear itself is a killer. It actually isn't good for the immune system. And it also is a big contributing factor to driving people's mental health in the negative direction and even heart health.
But the medical profession right around the world seem to be totally and utterly complicit with this strategy to scare the pants off the public to make sure they did what their government told them to do.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, to defend my colleagues, I think most of the ground troops, if you like, the frontline doctors were there just to try and deal with whatever was coming their way in the best way that they could. I would say it's more towards the medical leadership, I think, could have done a lot better because they essentially were going along with this. Although early on, I think a lot of them didn't know what they were dealing with. They were themselves fearful and scared. You know, they're also human. So, but once the evidence came to light that this is actually, you know, it was probably a better strategy to have focused protection and not implement these big lockdown measures. And also, I think the other aspect to all of this, Chris, is that when there were other voices, credible voices, who were, you know, from the very early on, the likes of Jay Bhattacharya, the people behind the Great Barrington Declaration, saying, you know, actually, there's probably a better way here. You know, they were smeared and their voices were suppressed. Mm. And that isn't good. That isn't, you know, the suppression of information, certainly in medicine or medical science, is the death of medicine when it comes in this sort of way, shape or form. And we have to learn from that.
Yeah. Just quickly, you supported COVID vaccines initially. When did you first become concerned about the risks?
Yeah, I mean, I support traditional vaccines because I put them, like most doctors, in a very special category, almost being untouchable. They are safe and effective. Yeah. And I was indoctrinated with that belief when it came to these vaccines.
And we had decades really and decades to prove that point, hadn't we?
Absolutely, mate. You know, and I'm a cardiologist and I also am informed by my patient contacts. And I've never seen or heard of anyone that's been vaccine injured before. And I think that also played a role in my thinking. But within a few months of having had two doses of the vaccine, certainly evidence started to emerge that what we were told at the beginning, that it was 95% effective under the belief that it would prevent infection. It clearly wasn't preventing infection. It wasn't preventing transmission. The narrative changed to preventing severe disease and death. And then what triggered it, although that was not at the time, but in retrospect, was my dad, who was a vice president of the British Medical Association, suffered a sudden cardiac death in July 2021. And then a few months later, evidence emerged, which became clear to me as a cardiologist, showing a mechanism of how the COVID mRNA vaccines can cause an acceleration in heart disease and cause and lead to basically sudden cardiac death and heart attacks. And once that information in a credible journal came to light, everything else started to fall into place and more evidence emerged that revealed ultimately these vaccines. And And the Canberra Weekly just published a story on this today on one of my talks and the interview I gave, is that these injections, these vaccines, if that's what they should be called, who knows, should never have been subjected upon a single human in the very first place. No one should have. They should not have reached approval by any medical regulator.
Not even for those in the vulnerable category?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And the reason for that is, Chris, is that the rate of serious adverse events from the highest quality level of evidence, which is a reanalysis of Pfizer and Moderna's own trials, reveal that the risk of suffering harm in the sense of a disability, life-changing event, or hospitalization, serious harm, was at least 1 in 800. And when it comes to vaccines, we have suspended and pulled other vaccines, regardless of the benefits, which, by the way, are negligible. But regardless of benefits, we've suspended other vaccines in the past for much less harm. And that's why it's a no-brainer. The problem is the medical authorities, the regulators are ignoring, they're willfully blind to this information. And the longer they carry on, the longer it's going to take to regain trust. Because what we are dealing with here, and this is quoted in the Canberra Weekly today, is something truly, truly horrific.
And I guess the danger for politicians is that if they pull up stumps halfway through, they look stupid, they look humiliated, they look like they don't know what they're doing, they get kicked out of office, and they have a major lawsuit on their hands at the same time. So they were never going to turn back, were they?
I mean, that's a good point, Chris. I mean, the problem is, though, that they can't just shove it under the carpet and just hope it's going to go away. Because the longer they take to admit that they got it wrong and that we need to do something as we move forward to, one, stop this happening again, but also now deal with the next pandemic, which is a pandemic of the vaccine injured. And that's not being addressed. The longer they take to do this, the more damage to trust, right? And one of the things we learn as doctors is that when the evidence changes, we have to change with the evidence to maintain that trust. Patients can be very forgiving if they believe their doctors acted in good faith and in their best interest. What they can't forgive doctors for, and I can apply this to politicians, is covering up their mistakes. And that's exactly what's going on right now.
I'm speaking with Dr. Haseem Malhotra. We'll return with him in about 30 seconds' time. I've got a news update for our listeners on TNT Radio.
Hey, I got news for you.
TNT Radio News.
It's about time.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. American companies getting into bed with transgender activists are losing billions of dollars in market value as consumers band together to boycott the brands. Serbia's military has issued a warning over growing violence in the breakaway region of Kosovo, vowing a harsh response if ethnic Albanian authorities start killing or displacing Serbs in the Serb-majority area. And Russia's top diplomat claims the West's role in Ukraine is tantamount to supporting genocide.
You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My special guest is Dr. Haseem Malhotra. Please excuse me for my basic nature in the question I'm about to ask, but I think it's important for people to understand it, or at least to remind themselves of it. How are the mRNA vaccines different to traditional vaccines, and therefore why primarily should we be concerned?
Well, traditional vaccines usually use an inert or a dead form of the, you know, of the virus or bacteria that you are trying to get immunity to. You know, it's not fully understood, but essentially the spike protein, which is what causes damage from COVID, which is thought to be essentially inert when it's injected into your body, you generate antibodies, stays in your arm maybe for a few hours, and that's the end of it. We have now have good evidence actually published in the journal Cell of the mechanism of harm. And that is that it gets distributed throughout the body and goes to every organ system, essentially, Chris, whether it's the heart, the brain, the kidneys, the liver, the ovaries, the testes, and likely either causes a direct toxic effect to those tissues or an autoimmune reaction. And this can happen for several months. So that's likely the mechanism of harm from these vaccines. And unfortunately, this isn't rare. It's very, very common. It's much more common than certainly, you know, most people even now. Fully understand, and a lot of people probably having vaccine injuries and don't even know it, that there was a vaccine that caused it. And part of that is because we were led to believe that vaccine injuries were rare or not even possible. So this is where we're at the moment. And of course, for me as a cardiologist, one of the most serious significant harms that are quite common is to the cardiovascular system. And I'm managing many patients now that I'm diagnosing these vaccine injuries, and I'm seeing anything and everything that can go wrong with the heart, whether it's heart rhythm disturbances, something called atrial fibrillation, which has massively increased in prevalence, certainly in the UK, heart attacks, cardiac arrest, myocarditis, heart failure. And what's most interesting or shocking, Chris, is that the World Health Organization themselves endorsed a list of potential serious harms from these mRNA vaccines when they were being rolled out. And anything and everything that go wrong with the heart is on the list, including many other organ systems being affected.
Disgraceful. Look, just disgraceful. Can I ask you this? Of the patients you have seen, are most of them coming to you in a state of suggestibility. That is, they've been, you know, suggested by reading or their own research or others that what their ailment could be is linked to a vaccine? Or are they coming to you totally not making the link and saying, I have got a problem with my heart, I've got a rhythm problem, what is this, and not linking it before they come to you? Because I'm only saying that because people can be quite suggestive or suggestible.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's a really good question. Both, a bit of both, Chris. Right. So some of them feel that so the thing is that, you know, in medicine, we learn, at medical school, we learn that 80% of your diagnosis comes from the history. What does that mean? If you know your stuff and you listen to your patient, 80% of the time, before you even examine the patient on any tests, you should get the diagnosis or have the most likely diagnosis. So, you know, as human beings, we know if something has changed, if something's different, if we've taken a pill or whatever else, you know, we are generally, subjectively, quite good at understanding a link between certain things going on in our bodies and stuff that we've taken, right? Whether even whether it's a food allergy, for example, or whatever else. So patients are often they're coming and saying, listen, I was fine and healthy. I had these vaccines within a few weeks or whatever. This happened. So you have to trace it. I mean, part of medicine itself is not an exact science. It's the art of probabilities. Mm. So, you know, we have to make diagnosis looking at all of the potential causes and then likelihood of all those causes, putting them together, what's most likely diagnosis here. That's how we make diagnosis in medicine. And this is what we do, what I've been doing with the vaccine. But some of them, Chris, absolutely are coming and presenting with heart attacks. And I do a history and I know what caused heart disease. And I try and figure out what would have been the risk factors. And many of these people don't have traditional risk factors, or they've had stable heart disease for many years and nothing's changed. And suddenly, you know, within a few months of having the vaccine, they're having another heart attack, or they're having, you know, new blockages that have appeared very quickly. And clearly you then say, well, given what we know, the most likely primary cause of your problem is the vaccine. So this is how we come to diagnosis or conclusions in relation to the vaccine, certainly when it comes to individual patients. But this isn't what we use alone. We use other bits of evidence, you know, what we call randomized controlled trial evidence, which is Pfizer Moderna's original trials and the reanalysis. We use something called pharmacovigilance data, the reports that are going into regulators across the world after, you know, people have taken the vaccine, and that's unprecedented in terms of its numbers. You've got autopsy data, you've got what we call observational data. So for me, as an academic clinician, when you look at all the different types of evidence and you put it together, it's so strong. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in terms of the harms. It's extraordinary. It's not speculation anymore. You know,
okay. The only question is?
No, the only question is, what is the absolute rate of serious harms of these individual conditions? And that is something that over time we'll get more clarity on. But of course, does it cause cardiac arrest? Absolutely. Does it cause heart attacks? Absolutely. Does it cause stroke? Absolutely. You know, we have, but the question is to what is the level? And then people will know what the benefits are. I mean, look at the benefits. They're close to negligible. You know, UK government released figures very recently looking at the Omicron strain and what benefit did the vaccine have for that. And if you're 70 years old, best case scenario, 1 in 2,500. You have to vaccinate 2,500 people to prevent one person being hospitalized with COVID, you know, and versus an adverse event rate, which is at least 1 in 800 on average. So
negligible.
It's a no-brainer, mate. This should never have been approved for a single human.
All right, I want to refer to a single case. Former Miss Bikini Island, Judy Fitzgerald, died unexpectedly, aged 32. She was a frontline nurse and qualified fitness instructor working to pursue a career in the fitness modeling industry. You tweeted, "This should not be happening, so sad." And indeed, the number of healthy young people dying suddenly is very alarming. We don't always know the cause of death in specific cases, but the general pattern should now be obvious. Why do so many politicians why can't they get a case like that through their head?
So there's a psychological phenomenon which we're all capable of in different circumstances, Chris, which is called willful blindness. So this is when human beings turn a blind eye to the truth in order to feel safe, avoid conflict, reduce anxiety, and to protect, you mentioned it earlier, protect prestige and fragile egos. Yeah. This is what we're seeing here. People are burying their heads in the sand because acknowledging this problem is something that we've got to be empathetic, is psychologically quite traumatic for many people. So that's part of it. But, you know, we've seen this happen throughout history. You know, there's It can even happen in situations such as a spouse turning a blind eye to the affair of their partner. We've seen it happen in institutions, Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood, the BBC and Jimmy Savile, right? Mm. This is no different, mate. But this, the scale of this is just huge. It's and so many people are involved, and so many people have been duped, and so many people feel that, you know, they'd rather, you know, people in positions of power probably feel that their positions of power will be under threat if they acknowledge this and they say we've made a big mistake here. So that's what's going on, mate.
Okay, let me talk about scale for a second. The Australian Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, says it has identified 14 deaths only linked to COVID vaccines from 973 reports received and reviewed. How likely is this a gross underestimation, and by how much do you suspect?
Well, you know, first of all, I think to say and suggest, I mean, this is, again, I believe in the goodness of people, that most people will do the right thing. And I suspect most of these people, the TGA, are those sorts of people. I think, again, it's for them, it's to acknowledge that this is a gross underestimate. It's probably too much for them to take in. And it's horrific, because also they then have to accept responsibility that they have been, you know, they're accountable, and they have been unwittingly complicit in this. Right. And that's a lot. So I don't think they're going to, you know, admit this very easily and very quickly. But if you look at the, if you ask me the question about deaths, you know, it's speculative, but there is some evidence to give us a guide on the, you know, what is the risk of death from these COVID vaccines. There was a publication in BMC Infectious Diseases, which, by the way, I must caveat with, was recently retracted, not because there were any methodological errors, but because the conclusions and the way that it was reported put pressure on the editor to retract the paper. And this was right. A survey, so it's not high quality evidence, but looking in America and asking people, because this is important, when we come back to the, most of your diagnosis comes from the history, how many people felt that somebody they knew suffered a serious adverse event or people died because of taking the COVID vaccines? And in America alone, in 2021, they calculated there may be as many as 278,000 fatalities from the COVID vaccines alone. Predominantly these were mRNA. What does that mean if this is true? We're talking of a death rate of about 1 in 1,000. For every 1,000 people vaccinated, one person has been killed because of it. Norman Fenton, who's a professor of statistics and risk in the UK, emeritus professor at Queen Mary University, he has calculated himself that of the excess deaths taking place in the UK, he says 50% of them, given pharmacovigilance data, this is what's being reported, by people where they feel that there's been a death linked to the vaccine, or their doctor has felt there's been a death because of the vaccine. He has calculated that this is probably 50% of all the excess deaths in the UK is directly and indirectly linked to these COVID vaccines.
Do you see longer term adverse health repercussions, say in years, decades to come, or because we had our last jab, say a year and a half ago, we're in the clear? Given how unknown this territory is, we're hardly in the clear, are we?
Good question. Theoretically, yes. I've had two jabs myself, mate, so I'm obviously also concerned about that. But I think with the evidence we have at the moment, I think people can take some reassurance that most of the serious adverse events will happen in the first few weeks to months after having had the vaccine. However, right. There is one caveat, and that's a troubling one. The acceleration of coronary artery disease. That's how my dad died. He had his cardiac arrest 6 months after the vaccine. A peer-reviewed journal accepted my conclusion that you know, a possible likely cause of his death was a vaccine. We will see people, and we're seeing it now, who are going to drop dead or have heart attacks months and years after having the jab. And I'm sorry to say that's my biggest fear.
Primarily because what is occurring at a swift rate to the heart? What's happening?
Yeah, so if you've got underlying, say, mild furring of the artery, so coronary artery disease, the blockages of the arteries, takes decades to develop.
Yeah.
Most people have, you know, usually have heart attacks after the age of 60, most of them, right? But it takes decades to develop. So let's say you've got a bit of mild furring that's not going to give you a problem for 30 years. You carry on as you are. Suddenly you're going to have a heart attack or suffer a sudden cardiac death within 6 months or a year, potentially. That's the kind of thing.
So what should we do? Like that indicates to me that I should hurry up and see my GP, get a referral to go to a specialist, and get on that stress machine and start testing how difficult my heart, you know, handles high stress.
Yeah, listen, it depends on individual cases, but again, these things are multifactorial, so look at risk factors. But the thing is, even before the pandemic, mate, we had a slow pandemic of chronic disease. probably 80% of Brits, Americans, probably Australians have excess body fat, which puts them at risk of things like heart problems.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, you know, which is safe and cheap, is sort your lifestyle out. This is the time to do it. We should have done it at the beginning of the pandemic. 90% of the deaths from COVID that happened globally happened in countries where more than half the population were overweight or obese. So that means sort your diet out, eat real food, avoid anything that comes out of a packet, moderate exercise, get your sleep sorted. That's the best thing you can do to protect your heart. And probably even if there is some potential damage from this vaccine, you're going to mitigate it significantly if you sort your lifestyle out. And you can have, and you can sort that out and have impact on your health within weeks of changing your diet.
Okay, Keith has just sent me an email saying, urgent question for Dr. Malhotra. I had four vaccines, AZ and Pfizer. How can we reverse the harm? Is there any way to produce an antidote? Both my wife and I have SARS-CoV-2 twice, most recently 2 weeks ago, wife treated with antivirals, took vaccines against my best fears, working in the US 85 to 87, and knew of mRNA monoclonal antibodies. So that's the email, but he's basically saying, how do we reverse the harm? You're saying, am I right, that we need to keep ourselves far healthier than what we're doing at the moment?
Yeah, and I think that's also what I'm noticing as well, not for everybody, but there is a correlation with the people who are vulnerable to COVID are also vulnerable to vaccine injuries, especially with the heart. So the thing, again, it comes back to lifestyle. But on that, Chris, the sooner the medical establishment, public health bodies, the government acknowledge that this is, we've now got a pandemic of the vaccine injured, and this likely should never have been rolled out in the first place because of structural failures, because our regulator gets funded by pharma, because of conflicts of interest. As soon as they acknowledge that, the sooner we can direct research and resources towards looking at what are we going to do to manage these vaccine injured people beyond the lifestyle stuff, whether it's the use of supplements or vitamin infusions or ivermectin, you know, who knows, but that's where the research now needs to go. And we can't get all those resources in the right place until there is an acknowledgement that we're dealing with something truly horrific in the population, and we need to get on top of it as soon as possible.
You've been very generous with your time. I'll let you go. Thank you so much. Enjoy yourself in Australia, in amongst all the interviews and the talks as well, because it is a good place to spend your time. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. All the best. Bye-bye.
All the very best to you too. Bye-bye. Dr. Haseem Malhotra, did that tell you something you weren't aware of? It told me many things that I wasn't sure about. And to have someone as eminent as he is in the area of preventing cardiac disease, in the area of diagnosis and management of heart disease, we have come at a good time. And it's terrific to have him on the program. Tony writes, Chris, I went to a doctor in my area last Monday, not my usual doctor. He asked if I wanted the fifth booster because of the latest variant, which can cause long COVID. He said to think about it. It's hard to say no when a doctor recommends it. Well, you can only take advice from the people you trust. But do we trust them as much as we did before? I doubt that because of what we've witnessed in the last 3 years. I've got to take a break. After the break, race car champion Larry Perkins, and when sport goes down a political track. This is Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Bravo! EU Member of Parliament nails how to fight back on the Great Reset. You cannot comply your way out of tyranny.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
EU Member of Parliament Christine Anderson had these sage words of advice to the rest of us.
You cannot comply your way out of a tyranny. It is impossible. Trying to do so, you will only feed a gigantic alligator in the hopes of being eaten last. But guess what? Your turn will come.
Bravo, EU MEP Christine Anderson. Anderson went on to say, speak up, stop complying, start rebelling. She concluded with, I have decided to become so absolutely free that my very existence is an act of rebellion. Tyranny only happens with the consent of the governed. It is time to fight the Great Reset. Join the Great Reject. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Every time you hop on your motorbike, who else is coming with you? Well, there's your girlfriend.
Hey, babe.
Your mum.
Hi, love.
Your dad.
Hey, shuffle closer, will you?
Your mates.
Hey, buddy.
How you going?
Oh, hello.
not to mention your dreams, your plans, and your future. So next time you're on your motorbike, ride safely. Because there's a lot riding on it. A message brought to you by the Government of South Australia.
You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, just after the hour, I'll talk to you about the awkward and embarrassing marriage of sport and national politics, this polarizing trend occurring more and more around the world as the woke infiltrate, you know, the policy in corporations and infiltrate the upper echelons of sport. And it was politics which dominated proceedings last night at the start of one of Australia's most watched sporting events of the year. I'll get to that shortly. But the same is happening in the multi-million dollar world of motor car racing in Australia. Famed racing car champion Larry Perkins says he will renounce his membership of Motorsport Australia in protest against his public support of the Indigenous voice to Parliament. Motorsport Australia has taken a side. Australians are set to head to the polls later this year for a referendum which will determine if a new body will be established which would allow representation to Parliament and to the executive of government on matters relating to Indigenous people. Motorsport Australia has now joined a vast number of other sporting bodies, such as the AFL and the Australian Rugby League and others, in stating its support. The six-time Bathurst 1000 winner joins me now from Mildura on the banks of the Murray River in far northwest Victoria. Larry Perkins, welcome to TNT Radio.
Yeah, good day, Chris.
Good to have you on. They say you're incensed about that. Is that a good description, incensed?
Absolutely. Look, I've been a member of Motorsport Australia since 1968, you know, 50-odd years, and its core values were it's all about motorsport, and you by rule are not allowed to advertise politics or religion on your car. And to have this jammed down our neck now without the slightest consultation with any member at all, and I've spoken to many, many members, has really got up my nose.
By adopting a side in this debate, it's making the presumption, is it not, that the key stakeholders, including drivers, including teams, support the voice, does it not?
That's exactly what it purports to do, and they've just got no authority to do that. It's just so wrong, and that's why I've made a public statement about it, that this membership, this lifetime membership that's been bestowed on me, amongst other things, been titled to me in the game. I just can't wear this anymore. And it's one of the few levers I can use to make a point to my particular sporting group. And I urge the other sporting groups. I mean, did they get permission from the sporting people to do this sort of act? I just think it's a low-life act.
Were you or the members of Motorsport Australia surveyed or asked your views on The Voice?
No, not an ounce of it. And what got up my nose, I heard it on the news over from Adelaide there Friday night. I Googled their website and saw not a slightest mention of it. And it didn't reach their website even till late Monday afternoon after I started making noises. And, it's just so lacked transparency. The president of CAMS, Andrew Fraser, and the CEO, Eugene Rocker, they got no right to act like this. It's a terrible situation they've put us in.
What do you think is in it for Motorsport Australia to take a side? What is in it for them? Why aren't they staying impartial, in other words?
Well, it's a bit odd, I understand. It can only be that, this woke mob that's going around the world right now, a lot of people are, let's be part of the woke mob, but I'd like to think they have more brains than that. And it can then only come down to money. Oh, let's not offend the government, because every now and again, all our sporting groups, and I'm pretty sure the whole lot of them get a couple of coins from the government over the years. And they shouldn't be. They need to come public, whether they're getting money or whether they've done it for reasons. If you don't do it, you won't get any money. But me being a cynical old guy, I reckon that's what it's all about.
So you reckon it's about that, and could it also be about appeasing the wokey trend that exists in corporate Australia at the moment, therefore their sponsors or potential sponsors?
Look, that would very much be part of it. And you know, various people have said to me, gee, you better watch out. It's a courageous move and so on and so on. But, yeah, because I've spent most of my life being sponsored by the corporate end of in the car racing, by the corporate end of town. But this is bigger than all that. And I'm not going to stand by and be idle on an issue that it shouldn't be in the, you know, the CEOs of all these companies should got to get off this woke brigade. We're just so sick to death of it.
Well, let's talk about the issue. For some of these political amateurs, it seems like a no-brainer that you would support anything that seems to back the improvement of Indigenous Australians. But it's a lot more complicated than that. It's a lot more dangerous to the structure of our Constitution, and it's incredibly divisive. Would you agree?
Well, absolutely, and there wouldn't be a person who you would naturally support it if you could see that it would support the Indigenous population. This is all about making the fat cat side of the elite woke mob in Canberra. There'll be a huge budget go towards it. It won't help a single Aboriginal who's living in poverty or in disadvantaged situation around the world, around Australia, I should say. And I've spent many months and years out in the Western Australia desert, Northern Territory desert, with these groups of peoples, and I've helped them with my hands on issues. And this is just absolute nonsense. And they know it. Albanese knows it. This is why we're getting zero detail. And when they say it'll help things that affect Aboriginals, well, every decision a government makes will affect someone, including Aboriginals. Since 1967, they've been as equal as anyone else.
I wanted to talk to you about your connection to Indigenous Australians. We've had about 80 significant Indigenous panels created. Voices, in many ways, you could describe them as voices, already set up and massively funded in this country, massively funded. And so, therefore, I would presume, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong, that Indigenous people think to themselves, oh, another committee.
Well, that's got to be right, because these billions of dollars that flows for the so-called good of Aboriginals doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go to the people that count.
Yeah. What communications have you had with Motorsport Australia since you've come out publicly to express your distress over this?
Well, the CEO has refused to recall back to me. He doesn't want to talk to someone like me. The president, unfortunately, is overseas, and I haven't been able to talk to him. But some of the directors are really nervous about this. It was indeed a very split vote, apparently. And but they've all confirmed that they never went to the membership, which is a subscription-based membership. Yeah, no, we're not a private company or anything like that. And that's it really, really upsets me.
And finally, has the sport ever taken a definite political stance on other issues, Larry? Is it a first?
I believe it's a first. Even in the cigarette advertising world, etc., which dominated motorsport, I don't believe they took a stand at all. That's running on my memory. Others control that, and that's not Motorsport Australia's role. They were set up in 1950, to look after the interests of motorsport and all the things that are motorsport. None of this, woke rubbish that's going on or something that's political. I mean, what's next that worries me? There's no end. Once you open this door, there's no end to whether you joined a motorsport company or did you indeed join a political party.
It becomes a grubby Pandora's box. Congratulations on your courage to state firmly what you think about this misrepresentation. And thank you very much for your time, Larry. Much appreciated. Good on you. Larry Perkins, race car champion. For those listening from other parts of the world, you must shake your head and think, what are those Australians doing? We're just about to change our constitution and give Indigenous people, that they are one of a multitude of ethnicities and races in our country, we're about to give them direct access to the executive of government. Because anything the government has tried in the past to fix their displacement, their disadvantage, their poverty, their addiction hasn't worked. And so this will apparently work. Now, I've got I've got some news for you on something that I spoke about at the beginning of the program, which was the case involving Ben Robert Smith, the former SAS soldier and Victoria Cross medal holder. A federal court judge has just thrown out Ben Robert Smith's defamation claims against three newspapers and three journalists in a devastating blow to the decorated war veteran. It looks as if Ben Robert Smith has lost his defamation case, which apparently was in the multi-million dollars in terms of his action. He had been suing nine newspapers and several reporters over articles that alleged he committed war crimes in Afghanistan. Justice Anthony Bosanko is delivering his judgment as I speak. I'll get further details for you next hour. And I'll also catch up with Mark Latham from One Nation and get his view on all of that and what the repercussions are for Australia and our military allies right around the world, including the United States. We've got to get to a news break and we'll come back, especially with Mark Latham and more, right here on TNT Radio.